How much confidence should people have in this new system here in LA?
None.
None?
Zero.
I agree with that guy. Who is that guy? You don't know, but he sure is handsome.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck
here
in the
I
middle
am.
With you. Yes, I'm stuck in the
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A., in Red Bluff and Redding, California, on KFOI, Round Mountains, KKRN, and Eureka's KGOE. In Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. In Lancaster, Pennsylvania on WLRI, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP. In Grand Rapids on WPRR, in New Orleans on WHIV. Out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ. Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. And yes, we stream coast to coast and around the globe every day for you on the internets, on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, Workforce Rising, Deprogrammed Radio, and Detour Talk, Blanketing Planet Earth. Sort of. 5 days a week, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow. Says me from bradblog.com. Boy, howdy, do we have a lot to cover today. What? It's taken days for the Iowa Democratic Party to release the numbers from Monday's Iowa caucus, and they still have got the numbers wrong? Yep, that's what it appears. But I will tell you this, the fact that we know the numbers are wrong is a very good thing. I will get to that in just a bit. Got a lot to cover here, as I said today. At my side, as ever, is the delightful and lovely Desiree Doyen. How are you, Desiree?
I am here, and that to me is a victory.
Are you holding on? Yes. Everything was supposed to be easier once the impeachment was out of the way.
Not so much. Not so with much? The full war breaking out in Washington, D.C., at least political verbal war.
Yeah, indeed. And that verbal war, you'll be happy to know, we will not be much covering today because
Good.
We have more important things to get to. You're right. Donald Trump did hold a pep rally of sorts. I'm not even sure what to call it, where he thanked all his supporters who helped him be acquitted for two articles of impeachment for which he was absolutely, definitely, provably, demonstrably guilty. In this sort of vicious, I don't even know what to call
it. Vicious, rambling, bitter, bonkers statement that
he had.
Well,
that's just a normal
White House
day in the life of Donald Trump
these
days.
Good point.
He did describe the evil, quote, evil and vicious people and dirty cops who he says were behind all of this. He said, if I hadn't fired dirty cop James Comey, the FBI director, I probably wouldn't be here now, he said. He called his perceived enemies leakers and liars. He said, we went through hell and we did nothing wrong. He held up a copy of Washington Post's front page today with great big letters, Trump acquitted, saying this is the final result, to a round of applause from his supporters who were gathered at the White House for this remarkable event. He called the entire thing from the White House on live television a word that I cannot even repeat or play here. That, ladies and gentlemen, is your president of the United States. He also viciously attacked Utah's Republican Senator Mitt Romney several times since the acquittal vote in the U.S. Senate on Wednesday, which we discussed on yesterday's broadcast. After Mitt Romney voted guilty on at least the first of two articles of impeachment against Donald Trump. And yesterday, I pondered with our guests Heather Digby Parton and Tom Sullivan, whether Romney's, given his courageous stance, whether he should be a nominee for a Profile in Courage Award. But I noted that after I realized he only voted guilty on the first article of impeachment for abuse of power, but not guilty on the second article, obstruction of justice, I was a bit less sure whether he deserved those sort of accolades. Since then, however, and I hadn't realized this at the time because it had happened maybe 30 minutes before airtime yesterday. I've since learned that Romney, the former Republican Party nominee for president of the United States, who, along with another previous Republican Party nominee for president, John McCain, has been mercilessly attacked by the current, still sitting, and forever impeached president of the United States, Donald Trump, I hadn't realized that Romney was actually the first senator in history, in U.S. history, to actually cast a vote of guilty in an impeachment trial against a president from their own party. That had never been done before. Granted, it's not a huge sample that we are working from. There have only been three presidential impeachment trials in U.S. history, but I had not realized until after yesterday's program that no senator had previously done that, voted against a president from their own party. So for that matter, and no matter how you or I might otherwise feel about Mitt Romney and his politics, for that alone, yeah, I sort of do believe he ought to be nominated for a Profiles in Courage Award for his courageous vote on Wednesday.
Yes, I would agree with that. And remember how the Republicans, the Senate Republicans, all said that they were really upset that Schiff had said during the actual trial portion, mm-hmm. when he said that there were the Republican senators had been threatened with having their heads on spikes.
Yeah.
Well, it looks like Romney is getting the full brunt of attacks from the Trump campaign and his fellow Republicans.
His head is on a pike indeed from the entire party and indeed from the president of the United States in several instances today. And last night, afterward, after his vote and so forth. Now, I had actually hoped to play Mitt Romney's remarks in full, his remarks in the U.S. Senate before his vote. If you haven't heard them in full, you should go do yourself the favor on YouTube or wherever and see his full. It's only 8 minutes. But unfortunately, I've got so much that I must try to get to today that I can't do that. But I did want to make note to clarify my thoughts on what Romney did here and how exceptional it actually was, particularly with these extraordinary attacks that he's now receiving, as even he predicted that he would in his own remarks in the Senate from this grotesque president and his horrific supporters. There was also this very ugly back and forth between Donald Trump and Nancy Pelosi today. Well, at least an ugly attack from Trump and an appropriately restrained response from Pelosi that actually began in comments from Trump at the National Prayer Breakfast on Thursday morning, of all places, when Trump took that opportunity to attack Pelosi while she was sitting there. At the table, at the prayer breakfast. And Pelosi is actually a very religious woman, by the way. He attacked her faith in God. I mean, it was just appalling. So I will also not play those remarks or Pelosi's response for lack of time, but also because they're being covered everywhere else. And I want to keep my eyes looking forward as to where we all go from here today and how we get out of this long national nightmare once and for all, that sadly did not end with Donald Trump's impeachment or his removal. Anyway, all you need to know for now on that score is that Trump is, you know, running around claiming victory and that the American people are with him, that this was a witch hunt and that his opponents are evil, but he and his supporters are victorious and they run the world. Well, these numbers are from the well-respected Ipsos Reuters poll just this week, February 3 and 4, on Monday and Tuesday. In the question, President Trump is guilty of abusing the office of the president. That was the first article of impeachment. 56% of registered voters agree. 56% agree, just 40% disagree. And of course, there's the usual split on the Democratic side and the Republican side. So let's look at the independent registered voters. Independent registered voters agree 67 to 30% that yes, Donald Trump is guilty of abusing the office of the president. On the second count of impeachment, yeah, the American people are right there as well. Registered voters say 54 to 40% they agree that Trump is guilty of obstructing Congress. And among independent registered voters, they agree even more so, 61 to 26%. So Donald Trump can say whatever he wants. He can lie as he does, as easy as breathing. He can say whatever he wants. But the American people know that he's wrong, and I hope they know that he is lying when he is out there talking about how much the American people are behind him and support him and think the whole thing was a hoax. They don't. The American people think he's guilty and he should have been removed from office, and he likely, or he perhaps might have, had Mitch McConnell and the Republicans not rigged the trial in the Senate to keep out any and all witnesses and documents for the first time in American history. So, you know those facts. Beyond that, I want to keep looking forward to keep our eyes on how we get out of this hellish, nightmarish mess that we are all now living under. To that end, and my apologies to the listener who tweeted me a few days ago, because I don't have his exact name or quote. I think it was a he. In any event, he tweeted something along the lines of, I'm sorry, The Brad Blog, where that's me. You can find me at The Brad Blog on Twitter. I'm sorry, The Brad Blog, but I have to take a break from the Bradcast, he said, because you just spend too much time on voting systems. Okay, well, I would like to think that after Iowa, at the very least, that Twitter person who tweeted me before Iowa, I would like to think that he and many others may now understand why this is so important before this election, this most critical election in our nation's history, and why understanding these voting systems before that election falls apart is so important. It's an election that I described earlier this week as our last firewall to stave off full-on authoritarianism in this country. And it should be noted that on the day that Donald Trump was acquitted, his attorney general put out a notice that from here on out, any investigations inside the FBI of any declared presidential or vice presidential candidate must go through him first for approval. So when I say this is our last firewall to stave off full-on authoritarianism, I'm hoping people are beginning to understand, even those people who are concerned about the fact that I'm trying to underscore the serious concerns in our voting system. Because if we can't vote this guy out, nothing else matters. So yes, sorry, not sorry, but we will continue to cover these issues and warn about the dangers and how voters can try to avoid them. I'll have news on the latest news and concerns and results out of Iowa in a bit. But as we look forward to upcoming elections, I have been spending quite a bit of time warning about the infiltration, if you will, of 100% unverifiable touchscreen ballot marking devices being deployed around the country for the first time in 2020. Now, if people want to complain about how Iowa went, at least we have a shot of knowing how people voted, because it's actually a rather transparent process, as confusing and complex as it is. But when it comes to these touchscreen voting systems, we can never know after an election. There is no evidence of how a voter actually voted. That seems important to me. So, yes, what we are looking at all across the country is more new, secretly developed, vulnerable, unnecessary computer tech for mission-critical elections, similar to the problem that brought down the Iowa caucus. So what could possibly go wrong? These systems are being deployed to battleground states like Georgia and Pennsylvania and North Carolina and Texas, and yes, even here in my home county of Los Angeles, the largest voting jurisdiction in the nation, for some idiotic reason. After I have been warning for years about this Los Angeles system, which our registrar, recorder, county clerk, Dean Logan, has been developing for 10 years, but will no longer come on this program to discuss with me, to answer questions about. After developing it for 10 years, I was at the very first meeting for what has now become known as the VSAP system, which stands for Voting Solutions for All People. So the VSAP solution, most of the media have out here in, out here in Los Angeles, but certainly around the country, have been either ignoring the serious concerns about this $300 million system, or they're writing glowing articles about it, about this, you know, this wonderful new modern way to cast your vote at the precincts in Los Angeles in 2020. It's fantastic. Well, now, at least some folks, now that we are just weeks away from the Super Tuesday elections on March 3rd, when these systems will be deployed for the first time in Los Angeles, a very small handful of corporate media outlets are beginning to take notice and to issue some warnings akin to the ones issued by some of us here prior to the Iowa caucus smartphone app meltdown, when we warned about that one as well. Earlier this week, reporter David Goldstein of CBS2 here in Los Angeles, he was here to interview me a week or two ago. He finally ran his report on what could prove to be a similar mess in Los Angeles, depending on how things go. And even, of course, if they go well, we can't know that afterwards, because we can't know if any of the votes cast on that system are actually as per voter intent. But if what happened in Iowa happens here and we have a problem with this secretly developed new tech in a mission critical election, it could affect some 5.5 million voters on Super Tuesday or in the general election this November. Now, David Goldstein didn't hit on all of the concerns that we have discussed on this program, but he hit on a few in a pretty good report where you will hear me quoted, as well as UC Berkeley professor Phil Stark, who has been on this show. And yes, LA's registrar, recorder, county clerk, Dean Logan.
On the heels of the Iowa caucus mess, CBS2 has uncovered some major concerns about LA County's computerized voting system.
Yeah, this is Californians prepared to head to the polls next month. Investigative reporter David Goldstein is here with what you need to know before you cast your vote.
This is a brand new system. State regulators already found dozens of problems with it. Well, LA's new computerized system costs hundreds of millions of dollars in taxpayer money. It'll be used the first time on Super Tuesday in March. Already, the city of Beverly Hills has sued to try and stop it, and critics warn your vote may be in jeopardy. This is the future of LA County's voting machines. A touchscreen computerized method, which everyone in LA County will be using on the March 3rd primary. It costs taxpayers $300 million to develop, but not everyone is confident it'll work. How much confidence should people have in this new system here in LA?
None.
None?
Zero.
He promised.
Brad Freeman hosts a radio talk show.
APFK.
He's a former software programmer, critical of election integrity issues nationwide, as well as the LA system.
They are untested. They failed more than 40 different California voting system standards when they were tested by independent testers.
These are the reports commissioned by the California Secretary of State's office, which shows dozens of security problems. This one found a large number of publicly known vulnerabilities that increased the likelihood of a problem in the future. Another stating lockpicking on the machine was attempted and was successful. Tamper-evident adhesive label seals were removed by testers, calling them easily defeated locks and seals. Even though Secretary of State Alex Padilla certified the system for use pending completion of certain conditions, but it doesn't satisfy everyone.
The overall design of the system is something that I have trouble with.
Philip Stark is a professor at Berkeley who studied the machines that have what's called ballot marking devices. That's this piece of paper that the computer generates with your vote.
Once you finish voting, you print your ballot. Then you can take it out, take a look at it, make sure everything is correct. Then you put it back in the slot, and it's official.
But once inside the machine, critics say your ballot could get changed without anyone knowing.
So a device that was misprogrammed, misconfigured, hacked, could print additional votes on your ballot, could alter your selections, could render your ballot unreadable.
How much confidence should voters have in these new machines?
I think voters can have a great deal of confidence.
L.A. County Registrar Dean Logan says there are backup systems and select post-election audits that he claims will ensure that every vote will be accurate.
I'm confident that we have done the due diligence to ensure that we've designed a system that is intended to make the process work.
The machines are Logan's baby, developed and owned by L.A. County. But a company called Smartmatic won the bid to manufacture them. Smartmatic has come under fire after irregularities in the Philippines during last year's elections. The country's president even lashed out.
Dispose of the Smartmatic.
Published reports also show delays with Smartmatic machines in Utah in 2016.
Does that concern you, the fact of what happened in the Philippines last year, what happened in Utah?
Logan says he's not concerned because the LA machines are designed by the county, not Smartmatic.
I have a high deal of confidence in the work they've done.
But critics say just the suggestion of improprieties could hurt confidence in elections.
Even if they work perfectly, the problem is we cannot know that after an election. That's damn dangerous, if you ask me.
Now, as part of an agreement with the state to allow these machines to go forward, all voters at the polls will be allowed to use old-fashioned paper ballots if they request one. But that's going to really tie things up. People want to do the paper ballots.
Sure.
They're going to fill those out. People aren't going to be familiar with these new machines. That'll take time as well.
They're going to need a lot of help with that. And the fact that you could just decide if you don't want, after you do that, you could say, oh, I don't think I did that right. I want a paper ballot.
Well, once you put it back in, I don't think you can
then
do that.
Then that's it.
But the good thing is, everyone should know, we have a 10-day voting period now. So if
that's right.
One day on election day, it starts 10 days before. They're hoping that they can iron out some problems in those first couple of days.
I'm just wondering, if you're not supposed to trust Smartmatic, a private company, they say it's okay. L.A. County designed the systems. When did L.A. County become an expert at designing a computer?
Well,
voter?
It was Dean Logan's baby. He designed it along with a number of people. It's been in development for 10 years. Well, L.A. County,
okay.
They say, is a unique county. A lot of voters, 13 different languages, so they want to develop a machine for everybody.
That's a lot of work.
We will see what happens.
And we hope it does work.
Yeah,
but we're going to be here a while.
Yes.
All right. Thanks, David.
Okay.
There you go. That was David Goldstein on CBS 2 in Los Angeles. His report from earlier this week featuring yours truly here and there. I thought he did a good job in general with that report.
Yeah, he did. I mean, obviously, there's way more to cover of the security vulnerabilities in this particular system, the user interface problems with the system. But I think he did a good job sort of summarizing the major points of it, except the part about the barcode being the part that is actually counted and that you cannot verify it.
Well, you can't verify it. You also can't verify the human readable portion as well, because 93%, as we learned in a recent University of Michigan study, 93% of voters do not notice when a BMD-style system like this has flipped one of their votes.
Yeah, and you know, I also want to speak to the guy who is tired of hearing about voting systems. I totally understand
be nice,
that.
Be nice.
No, I understand and I sympathize with him. It's just that I spend a lot of time on Twitter and Facebook debunking and educating voters about how their voting systems actually work.
And
there's a lot of misconceptions about
and
that.
And we're going to get to some debunkery in a second.
Good.
Regarding Iowa. But 2 points I do want to correct there at the end of David Goldstein's piece, where he said that old-fashioned paper ballots will be available for voters at the voting system, at the voting centers. Well, 1 point. It won't be the same old-fashioned paper ballots you're used to. It will be some special write-in ballot that the California Secretary of State is forcing Dean Logan and Los Angeles to have available, where you basically will have to write in the name of the candidate, the office, and the name of the candidate that you would like to vote for. That's if you want to vote on paper at one of these new voting centers. And when I say new voting centers, we are changing also in this election from 5,000 community precincts to about 1,000 voting centers, where you can go to any one of them and vote. You don't have to go to your same old precinct. We'll see how much the word gets out about that, and how much confusion and havoc there is on election day. We will cross our fingers and hope that the power or internet does not go out, that there won't be ransomware deployed that keeps everybody from being able to vote at all at these voting centers. But he said you can vote 10 days early. That is sort of true. But these 1,000 voting centers that are supposed to be open, and they've been pimping a lot as, hey, early voting, anywhere you want to go to a voting center, you can go in anytime 10 days before the election. Well, there will only be, as I understand, 4 of those voting centers open 10 days before. You can go to lavote.net if you live in LA and figure out where they are. Good luck to you. Otherwise, the other ones will be open on Election Day, or I think the weekend before the March 3rd election. Now, very quickly, before we go to a break, some of those comments from Dean Logan there. All of this was done, by the way, prior to the Iowa meltdown, including my interview with Goldstein and Dean Logan's interview. Some of those concerns from Logan there sounded somewhat familiar. Here's what Logan said when he was asked generally about confidence that he had in this brand new system.
I think voters can have a great deal of confidence. I'm confident that we have done the due diligence to ensure that we've designed a system that is intended to make the process work.
He's confident, and I hope he's right. As noted, even if he is right, we can't know if the votes are recorded the way voters actually wanted to. But hopefully there won't be chaos and everything will be okay. But when I heard those comments, it sort of rang a bell to my ears, and I realized why. Oh, it sounded a lot like Tom Price, the Iowa Democratic Party, when he was asked on CBS News about the Iowa smartphone app just the day before the Iowa caucus.
These are probably the most prepared we've ever been as a party for these caucuses. We've run through a few different scenarios, but I can tell you we're ready.
We're ready. He went on to say, we have backups of backups of backups. It sounded to me a lot like what Dean Logan was saying. Oh, we have spent a lot of time. I'm very confident. What could possibly go wrong? Well, we know what went wrong in Iowa, sort of. We still don't know fully what went wrong. Let's take a quick break and we will come back as we are learning even today. You thought it was the smartphone app that knocked out what happened in Iowa? Apparently, there was much more to it. Well, get to that and a whole lot more straight ahead on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't go away.
You can count on me like 1, 2, 3. I'll be there. And I know when I need it, I can
count. I'll be here. Whether I like it, whether you like it or not. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. A hotline that was used by Iowa precinct chairs to report Democratic caucus results to the state party on Monday night at the Iowa caucuses was reportedly flooded with calls on Monday from supporters of President Donald Trump. After that phone number was posted online, it contributed to the delays in the vote tallying process, according to Bloomberg News on Thursday, who first reported this. Mandy McClure, communications director for the party, told the Des Moines Register that on caucus day, the Iowa Democratic Party experienced an unusually high volume of inbound phone calls to its caucus hotline, including from supporters of President Trump. The unexplained and at times hostile calls contributed to the delay in the Iowa Democratic Party's collection of results. Now, you may have heard the stories that the smartphone app went down, or some, you know, folks out there had trouble using it or downloading it. So they got on the phone to phone in their numbers, but then they were held for hours on hold. Some of them hung up on, couldn't get through. Sources told Bloomberg that Ken Segar, a state Democratic Central Committee member, told other party officials on a Wednesday conference call that a high volume of people called in and express support for the president to this phone number that was supposed to be for reporting caucus results. Apparently, the number became public after caucus paperwork was posted online, and some folks had that number written on the paperwork, according to Bloomberg. NBC reported that the number was then posted on the fringe right-wing website 4chan, along with encouragement to, quote, clog the lines. Quote, they have to call in the results now. Very long hold times being reported. Phone lines being clogged, one user posted at about 11 p.m. On Monday, 3 hours after the caucuses had begun. That would be just about the time that they had ended, and they'd be calling in to the Democratic Party headquarters with these numbers. Another anonymous user wrote sarcastically, uh-oh, how unfortunate it would be for a bunch of mischief makers to start clogging the lines. Some users chimed in, posting alleged wait times on hold, imploring others to, quote, clog the lines and make the call, lads. Rob Sand, the state auditor of Iowa, said that he took result calls on Monday night as a volunteer and received an influx of calls that appeared to have been generated by a post on the internet. He said a lot of calls came in at a certain point where it was clear somebody had published the hotline number somewhere. Iowa Democratic Party officials said that party staff members and volunteers flagged and subsequently blocked repeated callers who appeared to be reaching out in an attempt to interfere with their reporting duties. These included callers who would hang up immediately after being connected and callers who expressed support for Trump and displeasure with the Democratic Party. So I know there's a lot of Republicans out there who think it's hilarious that there were problems reporting these numbers at the Democratic Iowa caucus on Monday, and that it somehow proves that Democrats can't do anything. And, well, maybe it does. You can make that case. But it looks like there was at least a number of Republicans out there trying to trying to monkey wrench these results. Thank you very much, Desiree. But this is not the first time that something similar has occurred. In 2002, Republican operatives jammed Democratic get-out-the-vote phones during a Senate election between Republican John Sununu and then-Governor of New Hampshire Gene Shaheen. In order, during an election to fill the seat of a retiring Republican Senator, Bob Smith, at the time. The New Hampshire GOP, at that time, had actually hired a telemarketing firm for election tampering, specifically involving the use of a call center to jam phone lines of the Democrats and their get-out-the-vote operation. In the end, as confirmed during a criminal prosecution of all of this, at least 900 calls were made for 45 minutes of disruption to the Democratic-leaning call centers. Sununu, the Republican nominee, won that election in a very narrow contest over Shaheen that could have easily been affected by that Republican effort. Now, four men were convicted of or pleaded guilty to participating in this scheme, this federal crime, and they were sentenced to prison for their involvement in this matter. And the state GOP had to pay New Hampshire Democrats $125,000 in damages. So I don't know that it's too far-fetched to suggest that this was, yes, monkey-wrenched, potentially, by Republicans, whether they were just, you know, supporters out there on 4chan, or whether they were actually party members somehow trying to get away with something here. We'll get a few more thoughts on that, hopefully on our next broadcast, when one of those Republicans who was convicted in this scheme and was sent to prison will hopefully join us to talk about what happened then and help us try to unravel what may have happened here.
And, you know, it's also a good warning that dirty tricks and monkey wrenching are about to go into turbocharged overdrive. This is only the beginning of that, and it's really important to be vigilant, especially about what you share online.
On Thursday afternoon, according to The Hill, Kathy Sullivan, who was the chair of the New Hampshire Democratic Party back during the phone jamming scandal in 2002, she called for an investigation into these reports that have emerged today. She said, quote, I was sickened but not surprised to hear that Republicans jammed Iowa Democratic Party phone lines Monday night in an effort to disrupt counting and reporting caucus results. So this is just one of many reasons that I have been noting here for years now that the focus on Russia and foreign interference in our election, while it's maybe important to try, and it's certainly important to try and guard against, but it is by no means the only interference that election officials and the public should be concerned about and should be guarding against. It is why focusing only on Russia or even other foreign adversaries results in the door, I would say, being left wide open for domestic criminals and mischief makers, and yes, even insiders and elections officials who often have direct access to our voting and tabulation systems. That cannot and should not be overlooked. And yet, you know, when I hear from Democrats so much about Russia, 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 yes, you need a system that guards against Russia, but you need a much more secure system than that. You need a system that is public enough that everyone can see what is going on and can help find, can help discover problems and results and numbers that don't add up. Now, none of this is by way of excusing the failure of the Iowa Democratic Party for choosing to use untested, secretly developed, highly unsecure tech in a mission-critical election, despite warnings beforehand from cybersecurity experts and folks like me who have covered voting system vulnerabilities for years. But add it to the list of things that in the 4 years since 2016 and the many years before that have been largely ignored by election officials and elected officials alike. As they add more and more such oft-failed, easily manipulated tech to our mission-critical elections. Just like what Dean Logan is preparing to do out here in L.A., but has much confidence in what could possibly go wrong. The chaos that has persisted since the Iowa caucuses on Monday, given the failure of this technology and anything else that may have contributed to it, has certainly been a black eye for Democrats at the beginning of the nominating process, as we still have only incomplete results from Iowa, even though we're now up to 97% of precincts reporting out of the Hawkeye state, as I last checked. But so much of this is predictable. Indeed, it has been predicted by folks like us. We warned about it. And I fear that this is only going to get worse, not better, as the process continues, unless election officials and elected officials wise up and wise up fast. Though I don't think they will. But there is a bright side to all of this and some important lessons that I think should be learned for those who care to pay attention. I'll get to those lessons in a moment, but just the 97% that have been reported by the Iowa Democratic Party. So those still incomplete and not fully confirmed numbers at this hour show us still that Pete Buttigieg and Bernie Sanders are pretty much in a virtual tie, separated by 0.1% when it comes to precincts. And just three state delegate equivalents, which is what they call them. So and we still have 3% more results to come in at some point. So it's pretty much an absolute tie, it appears, at least according to the reported numbers, when it comes to precincts and when it comes to total state delegate equivalents, as they call them. But when it comes to voters, Bernie Sanders actually won Iowa, at least according to these numbers. In the first round of voting, he received 42,600 or so votes. Buttigieg received only 36,700. On the second round, after supporters of candidates who were not considered viable in the caucus because they couldn't reach 15% in the first round of voting, after those voters adjusted to other candidates, Buttigieg picked up quite a few, and, Bernie Sanders got 44,700 and something votes. Buttigieg got 42,200, so about 2,500 votes difference, but
Bernie
still
won
Bernie
the second
won.
Round. Yeah. I see.
So that's where those numbers are. Make of them what you will, because there are still a lot of questions and concerns about those numbers. With the New Hampshire primary now, the next contest here, just days away, with still no final results from the Hawkeye state. But New Hampshire is, as I say, coming up Tuesday. I'm sure that will all go very smoothly, right? The numbers coming out of Iowa, however, have all kinds of problems. And while that sounds like that's a bad thing, I would actually argue that is a good thing. For example, a poster over at Daily Coast last night, who calls themselves Neutron, has an article headlined, Iowa Chaos, Sanders Votes Swapped for Deval Patrick, Warren Votes Swapped for Tom Steyer. And he cites a very awesome county supervisor in Black Hawk County, Iowa, who pointed out what he reported to the state was not what was in the final results. He made a post online at the time to that end, and it turns out, as Neutron says, some dude on the internet figured out what was being posted did not exactly reflect what it should have. And Deval Patrick's numbers and Tom Steyer's numbers looked to have been inflated. In fact, they were inflated. Some numbers in the results that were being reported were incorrectly put in place. Some votes that should have gone to Sanders instead went to Deval Patrick. Some votes that should have gone to Warren, etc., went to Tom Steyer. And we were able to fix these numbers. In fact, the Iowa Democratic Party put out an apology, said there will be a minor correction to the last batch of results, and they corrected some of those results. They were forced to walk back some of their initial numbers. Why? Because all of these numbers were public. All of the people at the precinct knew what the results were because they were all counted publicly at the precinct before the results left anywhere. It's one of the reasons I have called for hand-marked paper ballots, hand-counted publicly at the precinct on election night before those results move, before those are sent back to party headquarters. And here they were. So here, these results, which are chaotic, and which are now being entered manually into spreadsheets, sometimes incorrectly, at least they are being corrected. Now, the person who posted this at Daily Coast, Neutron, said, to be clear, if there is a conspiracy, I feel this is a conspiracy of carelessness or mistakes. There is no evidence that I have come across that this is some conspiracy to keep Bernie Sanders down or to keep Elizabeth Warren down, as I have heard from a lot of supporters of Sanders. I have yet to see that evidence. But these numbers have been corrected because they were made public. And the same thing I talked about happened back in the 2012 Republican caucus disaster in Iowa. Neutron writes, so here's the deal. This isn't a conspiracy fantasy. This is real, actual errors that were found by people not involved in the reporting. I would say it's a good thing that we found these errors and that they are now being corrected and reported. Compare that to whatever numbers happened back in 2016 that were counted in secret on computers that human beings were never allowed to oversee. How often do these problems happen? And we don't know anything about it. The difference here is that we have all of the information. We can look at it. We can scrutinize it. We can look at down to the... one of our friends, Lulu Freistadt, had discovered that there was what she described initially as a rounding error on a number of the worksheets that were completed at each caucus precinct in order to determine how
delegates, if necessary,
would be doled out at each precinct. And she collected the caucus math worksheets where we can see handwritten how they did their math. And she found, again, what she called a rounding error. And it's something, by the way, that John Nichols, who we had on the show on Tuesday, I think it was, just after he had come back from Iowa, he had mentioned this as well, that there were rounding errors, that they were rounding up some numbers when they had sort of fractional delegates left over that had to be given to one candidate or another. So, you know, if one candidate got 3.4782 in the math, Instead of being given three delegates, they were given four delegates. They were rounded up instead of rounding down. If they get 3.4, you'd think it rounds down to three.
Right, because you can't fractionalize a human being.
So she had Lulu had collected all of these math worksheets, which showed a lot of rounding up issues. And she was very concerned about this and concerned about the way the math was being done here and thought there might be something foul at play here. But once she put this out, well, her post on Twitter and at smartelections.us went absolutely viral. A lot of the Bernie Sanders people were pointing to this as evidence of how the election was being stolen from Bernie. It turns out it's not being stolen at all. It turns out a copy of the caucus guide explains exactly what is to be done with the leftover delegates after the math happens, after everyone has been rounded up or rounded down. If they still have leftover delegates, they are to be assigned to the essentially to the candidate who has the highest number that is under 0.5%. I know that's really confusing, so I'm trying to avoid going into the details here, but I'm trying to say this was done as per the caucus guide. And so while it was a concern at first and it went crazy, and I have seen people telling me that they're stealing it again, the Democratic Party, not just the Democrats, it's Hillary Clinton herself, is stealing the election in Iowa from Bernie Sanders. And here's the evidence. Well, this evidence, not so much evidence. It actually is evidence that people are looking over the numbers, that they are checking them, that they are trying to get them right. And it is something that we can do because the entire system is so public and overseeable. And that will eventually, once they get these numbers, that will save Iowa. And I hope that it will be a lesson for everywhere else. Yes, we don't want a disaster. We don't want a meltdown. We don't want new tech in our elections. But we do want the public to be able to scrutinize these numbers. As I said, there were all sorts of errors that have now been corrected thanks to public oversight. The New York Times late today runs a story, Iowa caucus results riddled with errors and inconsistencies. And, you know, they go through some of these numbers that I'm talking about where, you know, someone was given where Tom Steyer was given Elizabeth Warren's number at first until people noticed and it was corrected. The Times says there is no apparent bias in these accidents in favor of either the leaders, Pete Buttigieg or Bernie Sanders. They say that overall the effect on the winner may be small because it's so close. But where were all of these people in 2016? You know, Tom Perez, the Democratic DNC chair, went out and said, enough is enough. We found inconsistencies. In light of the problems that have emerged in the implementation of the delegate selection plan and in order to assure public confidence in the results, I am calling on the Iowa Democratic Party to immediately begin a recanvass. That's essentially a double check of those numbers. Iowa officials would have to hand audit the caucus worksheets and reporting to ensure that they were all correctly calculated and reported. And I would say, good. But I would say, where were all of these people in 2016? Where was the DNC and the Democratic Party? Why didn't they sue Michigan and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin to have a re-examination, a re-canvass of the numbers? Why didn't they call back then before we got this madman as president to make sure that the numbers were actually right, those that were kept in secret, counted in secret in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, in Wisconsin? Where were those people then? Good. Re-canvass them. Recount them by hand now from scratch. I am fine by that. But it would be great if that happened in every election, not just when the Democrats screw up their caucuses. Take this as a positive lesson. Public results, public reporting is a good thing. We are finally able to oversee how this process works. That's how every election should work. Quick break, and we're back with Desi Doyen and the Green News Report right after this. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. One of these days, things are going to slow down and we'll have time to chit chat.
I know. And talk about more stuff.
This is not one of those days. So let's get to it. Our latest Green News Report.
Thanks to our bold regulatory reduction campaign, the United States has become the number one producer of oil and natural gas anywhere in the world.
Trump misleads again on U.S. energy in his State of the Union address.
Everyone in this country benefits when we invest in infrastructure.
While Democrats focus on rebuilding the country. Congratulations, you just lived through the warmest January on record. Plus,
the UK has now committed to $11.6 billion in tackling global climate change.
Britain accelerates its ban on gasoline cars.
All of that acceleration and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Which reminds me, cold, beautiful, clean, the way of the future. This one lump of coal can power a light bulb for almost 2 minutes.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, say it isn't true. Donald Trump lied about oil and gas and energy at his State of the Union address? That can't be.
Yeah, sorry to break it to you. I know it's a shock.
It is.
During his remarks in the State of the Union address this week, President Trump shelled out a number of exaggerated, misleading claims and outright lies about the U.S. energy sector, taking credit for actions taken by previous presidents, as he does, like this.
Thanks to our bold regulatory reduction campaign, the United States has become the number one producer of oil and natural gas anywhere in the world, by far.
So, according to the Federal Energy Information Administration, the U.S. has been the world's top producer of natural gas since 2009.
I didn't know Donald Trump was president in 2009.
The U.S. became the top producer of oil in 2013.
I didn't know he was president in 2013.
Well, that was under Obama, but the trend began under Presidents George W. Bush and Obama, not because of Trump's deregulation. The only thing Trump's regulatory rollbacks have succeeded in doing is making air and water pollution worse in the United States, and that's according to Trump's own Environmental Protection Agency.
Well, that's good. Did he brag about that in his State of the Union?
Nope. Trump also misled the public on U.S. energy independence.
With the tremendous progress we have made over the past 3 years, America is now energy independent.
Now, that is just false. There is no such thing as true energy independence with oil because oil is a global commodity. The U.S. continues to import oil and is still vulnerable to global supply shocks. And, of course, we should note that while President Obama gambled correctly that launching the natural gas drilling boom would kill off polluting coal plants, the fracking boom has become a major contributor to U.S. greenhouse gas emissions because of methane leaks, and those have increased under Trump's regulatory rollbacks.
Rolling back a regulation from President Obama that would have closed off those methane leaks.
Exactly. Trump also touted joining the 1 trillion trees global reforestation initiative.
Well, that sounds nice.
That's intended to plant trees, but he didn't mention that his administration is focused on cutting trees down, increasing logging across the public's national forests. In the Democratic response, Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, unlike Donald Trump, at least mentioned climate change. She focused primarily on Democratic officials who are rebuilding infrastructure wherever they can.
All across the country, Democratic leaders are rebuilding bridges, fixing roads, expanding broadband, and cleaning up drinking water. Everyone in this country benefits when we invest in infrastructure.
Meanwhile, January 2020 was the hottest January ever recorded since record-keeping began in the 1880s. That's according to Copernicus, the European Union's climate agency, and it's expected to be closely matched by NASA and NOAA analyses later this month. For the first time on record, Oslo, Stockholm, Helsinki, and Copenhagen all remained above freezing for the entire month of January. The new heat records put 2020 on track to be among the top two hottest years on record, thanks to man-made global warming. Finally, some good climate action news. Britain has announced it is moving up its ban on the sale of new gasoline, diesel, and hybrid cars to 2035. That's 5 years earlier than previously planned. It's an attempt to reduce air pollution and address climate change, Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced this week. Ending internal combustion engine cars in the UK will also generate jobs, as the plan includes funding to build out a national electric car charging network.
So this is Donald Trump's friend, Boris Johnson.
Yes.
And he's in favor of spending billions to fight climate change?
Yeah.
That's weird. Maybe he'll have a discussion about it with Donald Trump. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report, and help Desi and I to keep going with the Green News Report by stopping by bradblog.com/donate. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Beep, 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 yeah!
So they're actually banning gas cars in the UK?
Yes, gas, diesel, even hybrid cars to cut air pollution because that saves money on public health.
Why can't we do that here?
We can. It just requires getting the people into office, and that means people have to vote.
And that means some people have to get out of office. very good. Thank you very much, Desi Doyen, our producer. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program or any other, I hope you will download it for free and share it with everyone you know at bradblog.com, where we make every show going back through the beginning of time available. That is thanks to those of you who support our efforts by stopping by bradblog.com/donate to help us continue. Drop me email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com on the Facebooks and the Twitters. I am the Brad Blog. That is it. Until we see you next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Beep.